This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Cheryl LaRoche is an archaeologist and historian. Her research focuses on the Underground Railroad, used in the 18th and 19th centuries to help Black Americans flee slavery. LaRoche has explored churches, cemeteries, and other places to find their connections to the Underground Railroad. She teaches in the Africana Studies Department at the University of Maryland. LaRoche will speak at Western Michigan University on Tuesday. Her address is called The Geography of Resistance, Historic African-American Communities and the Underground Railroad. And Cheryl LaRoche joins us via Skype. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much for your invitation. Good morning, Gordon.
First of all, what do you mean by Geography of Resistance? Because that's also in the title of one of your books.
Yes, it is. And let me just begin by saying I teach in the Department of American Studies at the University of Maryland.
I apologize. We'll get that corrected.
Yes. The geography of resistance is a set of principles that I've finally pulled together from walking and researching a number of African-American communities and sites across the country, mostly the American North. And in that, I began to see overarching principles. And in other words, I could begin to see that people were located specifically in regions where the land was undesirable. They were located generally near waterways, that there was going to be a Black church or a Quaker community or a religious community nearby. Those are some of the things. And as I began to bring those geographic components together, what I found was that it was an alternative way to begin to think about the Underground Railroad, to begin to locate sites, to begin to put together a different kind of narrative based on geography that helped us do the research so that we could sort of clarify what the Underground Railroad is and was. And I'm sure most people who do this work understand that in many ways we're relying on centuries-old information, and it's an area of research that I want to say in the late 20th century began to really be reinvigorated, and we began to think about this in new ways. And the geography of resistance is a contribution to the new scholarship on the Underground Railroad.
Obviously, you can't really talk to anybody who was involved in the Underground Railroad at this point. They're all deceased. So what are the things that you go and find as you're doing research that give you some clues and help fill in that picture a little bit better?
Well, you know, one of the things that I look at it are the sort of stories that have been refuted, things that people don't believe. I go back to the legend and the lore, the things that have been discounted, and assume that there's a kernel of truth somewhere in there, and to follow that, to look at the oral history, to look at the family histories, because many people retain small components of a larger story embedded inside their family histories. I rethink narratives of escape, newspaper articles. Once you have the name of someone other than the famous Underground Railroad operative like de Baptiste or someone like that, and you start to see names repeated, let's say, in the colored convention movement and names in the church rolls, you start to be able to weave together a different kind of understanding based on resources and sources that have been overlooked. I start to look at how women come out of slavery and what are those kinds of stories and the court cases. And, you know, we all use the ads for people escaping slavery, but the court cases are another valuable resource. So we have to dig deeper. Unfortunately, our research does not yield huge amounts of information in one sitting. And so it's arduous and tedious work, but there is a way to penetrate this narrative and to look at the really recognized sources such as Wilbur Siebert and William Still's work and go deeper inside and mine those works as well for more information.
How different is the story of women fleeing slavery on the Underground Railroad as opposed to men, since you did bring that up?
That's my latest research is really looking at women. Initially, what we see is that because women are difficult to find in the sources, they have been theorized out of the Underground Railroad in most circumstances. In other words, we don't see men written up, and so we conclude that women didn't escape. However, some of the most famous people in the Underground Railroad who escaped on the Underground Railroad are women, you know, starting, of course, with Harriet Tubman, but, you know, Ellen Craft, when we look at many of the stories, women are embedded inside of the stories. And I would argue that we have this sort of narrative of the single hero, and women come out of slavery in groups. They come out assisted. So the single hero figure is not applicable as much for women. Tubman and a few others, yes. But generally speaking, women are with their families, they're with their children, they're coming out in under different circumstances, and it doesn't look the same as when men escape from slavery, although men also escape with their families as well.
Who are sort of the main players here? And by that, I mean the organizations, you know, religious institutions, et cetera, who are the, surround the Underground Railroad and its history?
Yeah, that's a good question. We can look to, and one of the parts of the research that I advocate is looking to these various vigilance committees, the anti-slavery societies, but more the vigilance committees, the colored convention movement, the African Methodist Episcopal Church, the Quakers, the Presbyterians, the Baptists, particularly the Black Baptists, and depending on the part of the country, you're going to be looking for different denominations based on where you are geographically. So when I am moving across the country, I have to shift my lens and my focus depending on where I am. So if I'm in New York State, I know the AME Zion Church and the colored Presbyterians are going to be more prominent. If I'm moving a little further west, I know I'm going to be looking at the white Presbyterians. I know the Congregationalists are going to be active a little further west, so that you have to know where you are and what the organizations are that are indicative of the local communities that you're studying. But generally speaking, you know you're going to find a vigilance committee. You know you're going to find some form of a religious society, some form of the Lane Cemetery, some form of school. These schools are often established inside of this Underground Railroad network.
When you shift your focus and put that lens on Michigan, what do you see in terms of the history of the Underground Railroad?
Well, you know, Michigan, because of where it's located, it's further north. It's not as critically immediately dangerous as, let's say, the borders right along the Ohio River or the borders right along the Mississippi River. So Michigan, what I see is more of an interracial connection, people moving through the state on the way to Canada, particularly after 1850, when we know that no place in America is safe. So Michigan is in part a conduit. Detroit becomes a major hub and a major center. But I think that Michigan has a varied story depending on its geography. So if you're along the waterways and the lakes and immediate access to Canada, you have one story. If you're in the northern sections of the state or the western sections of the state, you have a different kind of story. One of the things that I appreciate about Michigan and Illinois and Indiana also is that the state has done a lot of the work for laying the groundwork for the new interpretation of the Underground Railroad. And so what we know about Michigan, when we begin to apply, let's say, the precepts of the geography of resistance, when we begin to apply this new way of thinking about the Underground Railroad, which really does bring in Black communities, Black community formation, and the Black church, in addition to the Quaker settlements, these other kinds of locations, the vigilance committees and the Black Convention Movement, for example, I think we're going to see, even in Michigan, where a good bit of work has been done, that a new narrative will emerge, more interconnections among these various organizations and places.
What remains out there in particular? Is there a particular area of study that you really want to get into on the Underground Railroad that you think is maybe ripe for historians such as yourself to take a good long look at?
You know, Gordon, there's so much left to be done. Certainly looking at the women, certainly looking at these interconnections that I'm talking about. I am very interested in rethinking the map of the United States and rethinking the overall narrative of the Underground Railroad. So I think historians, A, by following individual stories, because we have so many individual stories that need to be really looked at more deeply and more critically. And one of the things that I have found difficult is that because we don't have a body of work, let's say diaries and personal accounts from many of these people. We know, for example, in the East, in particular where I have been doing a lot of work, that people are interconnected even though they don't particularly say, I knew this person, I went to dinner with that person, I spent time with this person, but we see them overlapping in these institutional settings. So one of the things that I think has to happen is we need to begin to draw a narrative of interconnectivity among the Black abolitionists in particular, but among these different factions and different institutions that are working together. So right now we have discrete stories that we loosely tie together. But as we watch people moving from the East to the West and moving into Michigan and moving across these states, Michigan has a lot of people who are migrating in and they're bringing their thoughts with them. Those people are connected back into the states further to their east. And so we have a lot of work to do. And I think that technology, because we're scanning documents, I no longer have to move across the country in the arduous ways that I had to in the beginning, because many of these things are now scanned. I can go to the archives. I can look at, you know, these different historical societies. I'm so grateful for the digital process that has really made this work possible. I could not have done the work that I have been able to do without technology in the 21st century. It has made a new kind of digital underground railroad network, and the Network to Freedom, which is part of the National Park Service's initiative for the underground, for documenting the Underground Railroad, has been another valuable resource in pulling together these disparate and discrete and far-flung kind of geographical locations that are implicated in the Underground Railroad.
But even with all of the available technology that you have and being able to use digital records, how important is it for you as someone who is an archaeologist that you do go to the sites, that you actually get there physically to at least walk the grounds and have a look at where some of this history actually happened?
It's so critically important for me to walk the landscape. I mean, I'm looking forward. When I come to Michigan, Dr. Nassani and I will be walking the landscape, because that's when I can really verify the geography of resistance. And in places, let's say like Michigan, where, you know, the terrain might be not as dramatic as other places that I walk. I might not be in the bottom of a ravine, for example. It's critical that I walk the site, that I see the relationships, that I understand the distances, that I can feel the quality of the soil, that I can see the relationships, let's say the spatial relationships between if these places are standing or if they have been identified archaeologically, the geographic and spatial relationships between the churches and the communities and who is situated where and what's going on by the water or how far are we from the conveyances and public transportation. All of these things help me to verify that the methodology is sound. I've been now across the country talking to dozens and dozens of people who have applied the geography of resistance, which has helped them identify, rethink, and remap their own local underground railroad stories. So I like to say, I rarely like to talk about a site that I have not visited. And some of this, I have not visited sites in Michigan other than really Detroit. So it's going to be, and even there, to see the relationship, to see how close Detroit is to Canada, to see how quickly one can get there. Those kinds of things help me when I'm moving to another part of the country. So being in the landscape is critical for me as an archaeologist and as a researcher who uses geography as a text, really. I use the land as a text.
Cheryl LaRoche, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Cheryl LaRoche is an archaeologist and historian. She's also on the faculty at the University of Maryland. She will speak at Western Michigan University on Tuesday. LaRoche's address is free and open to the public. It's called The Geography of Resistance, Historic African-American Communities and the Underground Railroad. You can find more details through a link at wmuk.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.